Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. This is hour two for the 6th of December, and it's a Thursday morning in hour two, and that means that Professor Jim Bilby is joining us in studio, as he does almost every Thursday, with our Ask Anything segment, in which we take questions and phone calls and texts from you about anything related to the faith, whether it's a theological question that troubles you, whether it's a biblical question you don't understand, a faith question, a family question. It is all fair game when Professor Bilby is in studio with us like this. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well. I have to say I really love this season of Advent. I love the time waiting for Christmas. I didn't celebrate Advent much in my 20s and sort of early 30s, perhaps. I was part of the Catholic Church growing up for about 10 years there, so we did some of it, but it was kind of lost upon me. But it certainly is something that has reemerged in my life due to the influence of my wife, Hallie, who really just brought some wonderful rituals and the liturgical calendar, and it really has given us a different kind of pace as part of this season. And so I'm curious for you and your family, and what has been your background with Advent? What are some things that maybe you've done or not done?
Yeah, you know, can I also just say as an addition there, I think we can probably safely say that most of the really positive things in your life are a result of Hallie.
Yeah, but I'd say that's very true.
Above and beyond that, no, Christmas has been, I think, just this magical time. And for me, it's very much connected with my family and my kids. And just seeing the sort of like the anticipation in their eyes and the joy and that they love decorating and going to get the tree. We have always, for as long as, you know, I think pretty much our entire married life, we've gotten a tree, we got out and cut it down. And now the kids have been, that's something the kids have been really into and really, and they, that whole process and then putting up the tree and decorating everything is just something that they just revel in. They think it's they have a lot of fun with. And so there are a number of other things that we will do. We take in Bethel Festival of Christmas, and just those key events that we always do. Then there's nostalgia surrounding those events. There's really amazing things.
So you actually cut down your own Christmas tree, because I'm afraid if I ever tried that, I would lose a digit. And, you know, given 10 years of that, I'd be down 10 fingers at that point. And so this is something you do. You pay money to go into a tree farm to cut down a tree yourself. Are you the guy that does this? Do you take a hacksaw, or what do you do here?
No, it's a big saw. It's not a chainsaw. You just take a big saw, and, you know, there's tricks to it that make it easier and stuff. But, oh, yeah, absolutely. If you were to buy, so we have a larger great room, and so we can get a pretty decent tree in there. If we were to go to a lot around here and buy a tree that would be decent sized, it'd cost us like $200. So we go drive 45, you know, minutes, hour north, and go to a tree lot and get something for $60 that's, you know, 10, 11 feet tall. So
that's fabulous.
It's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's great. Well, as we head into break here, we've been asking our guests all week if they have a favorite Christmas song. Is there one that you just get really dialed into during this time of year?
Hark the Herald Angels Sing. And I don't know why, but every single time I hear it or try to sing it, tears pour down my face.
Well, I love it. That's the voice of Jim Bilby, professor of Christian theology. So queue up your questions if you have them. You can call the studio or you can text your questions in at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-FAITH. And you can come into the studio with any question that you have as part of our Ask Anything segment next. Well, Jim, that is your new walk-up music. You're finally, after all of this time, I this is a season of hope, and I kind of lost hope that you're going to continue to steal my music, my own walk-up music, but you finally got your own for this segment. Tell us about this walk-up music.
Well, this is this whole idea of me stealing music is really fascinating to me, but... No, we decided to, if we're going to do this, we should do this right. We should have a little bumpers music. And that's a song by Dire Straits called Sultans of Swing. And I actually love it because it's just got some amazing guitar.
It does have some great guitar, too. I love the choice on that one, Jim, bringing that into the studio with us. And, of course, this is our Ask Anything segment that we do on Thursday mornings. And we will take your questions, as we have every Thursday morning in the past like this, at any time at 877-93-FAITH. And, Jim, you and I were texting yesterday a little bit about some possible topics. And, of course, one that continues to be top of the mind in our country with some of the caravans that are emerging out of Central and South America and arriving at the border here, as well as so much of what's happening in Europe and some of the tension within the European Union in terms of this kind of immigration crisis and this almost relocation of so many people. As you think about the immigration and what's all happening around our world, what are some sort of initial thoughts you have about this?
Yeah, I mean, for me, this is one of the more intractable issues on our current, I mean, amidst all the very difficult issues in the current political, social, cultural realm, this is one of the more difficult ones. And I think sometimes when we approach these, unfortunately, we just listen to the sound bites by the extremes that there seems to be no hope of reconciling those. But as a Christian, when we engage these things, I think, let's just step back and what are the fundamental values that we can agree on. And the fundamental, the crucial one is the idea that as Christians, our heart has to be breaking for the people who are their home. I mean, obviously, if their home was a place that was viable, that was safe, they would desire to stay there. But that they're driven out of their home by corruption, by war, by whatever it would be, and they're looking for for hope somewhere else. And so, especially for Christians, with the story of Joseph and Mary and Jesus being forced to leave, fleeing oppression, fleeing the threat of death, and going down to Egypt, this has to be something that we as Christians resonate with. Not thoughtlessly, not just like, well, okay, whatever, but... we have to engage this, and our heart has to break for those people, it seems.
How do we handle the idea of sort of a nationalistic tendency to say that we identify with our country of origin? Maybe we're American, or if you grew up in Scotland, you're Scottish, or if you grew up in France, you're French. How do we identify with our country of origin like that while also recognizing the common humanity that we share regardless of country, knowing that lines on the map change, knowing that our national origin is maybe just a piece of the puzzle, but that isn't our identity? Is there a call to all of us to see some sort of common humanity here?
Yeah, don't you think, right? I mean, as Christians, how do we see ourselves first and foremost, most importantly, as Americans? Now, I'm proud to be an American. There's no question that there's an identification at some level. But for me, first and foremost, I'm a Christian. And that has such a greater call on who I am and how I think and how I want to engage in this world than being an American ever would be. Now, that doesn't mean we do things that are foolish as Americans, right? It doesn't mean that at all, but it means that hopefully we are making decisions as Christians first and foremost, and then only secondarily as Americans.
So how do we handle this in sort of a brass tacks nature as a country, would you suggest, given the example, and I've heard that, let's just say somebody showed up at your door or at my door and was in need, was fleeing a situation, needed to have some sort of shelter, needed some kind of sustenance. And I think, if three or four people showed up at our house, it would strain the resources of our house to a certain degree, but we could over time pretty easily assimilate and accommodate that in our household. If 100 people showed up on our doorstep all at once, it would be next to impossible to do that without overwhelming the entire house. And so how do we handle this kind of thing, recognizing the compassion, the common humanity that we share, the desire to help one another with the resources that a country may or may not have?
Yeah, your example is exactly correct, right? So a lot of times when people are talking about this, like, well, of course, immigration is a great thing. We're a nation of immigrants. Well, yeah, obviously. But we're not talking about, I mean, if we're talking about 1,000 people, great. If we're talking about 1 million people, great. If we're maybe even talking about 2 million people, you know what? As a nation, we'd probably be fine. But if you're saying, let's have 150 million, not, I don't think anybody's saying that, but there would be a point where it would be too much. So what we need is we need a coherent immigration policy, and we need it on both fronts. We need it with respect to how do we think about unauthorized, and I actually have a very significant preference for unauthorized immigrant, the term, instead of illegal immigrant. How do we think about unauthorized immigrants that are currently in America, and what is our policy surrounding that? And how do we think about current, you know, opening up doors, creating possibilities for current legal immigration to allow people who can to seek asylum that are in really difficult situations? But the problem is that we seem to be unable to form coherent immigration policy on either of those fronts. The last time we had a meaningful immigration policy that really tried to address these issues is 1986.
Mm.
And this is a problem, and people are in the context it becomes more of a talking point to bash the other political side, rather than a genuine attempt to sit down and hammer out something that will be helpful both for our country, that allows our country to continue to flourish, but also allows speaks to these situations that I think we need to have our heart broken for.
We're talking with Jim Bilby this morning, professor of Christian theology, as part of our Ask Anything segment. You can call or text the studio at any time at 877-93-FAITH. Jim, one more thought on immigration before we head to break, and that's that our family was down at Epcot Center in Florida Disney World a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things that I love about Epcot is that you can travel around this lake and go from country to country to country, and we ate Thanksgiving Day meal at the Moroccan restaurant, which is an unusual experience. It was certainly not turkey and mashed potatoes as part of our meal there. But part of what I appreciated was the distinction of culture. You go from place to place and suddenly you find yourself sort of in this little Italy, and then from there you're in China. And I love the cultural distinctions. They expand and grow and kind of shape me. And so in this mass globalization and this immigration, that we do want to care for one another across the world, but do we also maybe risk losing some of the cultural distinctiveness that really can grow and shape us as well?
Yeah, but I would say, so I think there is, of course, that risk. And I think some of what the fear that's coming out about this immigration issue is a fear of a loss of who we are, loss of culture, that people coming in won't assimilate, won't connect themselves, won't see themselves as Americans. So I understand all those fears, but I think those fears are perhaps, I believe they're unfounded. Past waves of immigration, you had the Italian Americans and the German and all these, and for a while they were in their own segments. And now do we speak of people as, well, that's that German family?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Now we
yeah.
speak of them as Americans. And so, so what we need to do is I think we need to create a context where cultural differences are valued and seen as being really, really positive, and that those continue to be celebrated, but that we seek to find amidst our common humanity, we also find a common culture.
Mm-hmm. Jim, we'll take a short break here. When we come back, I've got to ask you a little bit, getting back into the Joseph and Mary story, and specifically about the three wise men. And they made some moves and some decisions in their lives based on some astrological signs. And so I'm curious about that relative to our faith. We'll talk with Jim Bilby about that next on Faith Radio Mornings. been so fun playing Christmas music in and out of breaks here this past week because we're part of the Advent season. And Jim Bilby talked a little earlier today about enjoying Advent as well and so many of the different traditions as we celebrate our faith. Jim, we were talking immigration in the first segment. We do have a comment from a listener texting in, says that on one side of the coin, they are legal immigrants, or as you said, unauthorized immigrants. On the other side, we need to be compassionate. When the law is not enforced, it ceases to be a law, and so everyone ignores the law. Shouldn't the government have integrity to either enforce the law or, if not, follow proper procedure? What would you say to this interesting listener comment?
Well, absolutely, right? I mean, so as a nation of where law matters, you can't ignore the law. And so I've heard, you know, some of my friends will say, well, what's the big deal? They're just unauthorized immigrants. Well, they're unauthorized, right? I mean, that's their laws here, right? But here's the other problem, that we have certain laws that we have to allow people to apply for asylum. And the government is not following those laws to allow people to do that, right? So what all this does is point to a need for a coherent immigration policy that addresses these issues, both with compassion, but also with an eye to supporting and continuing to help America and its economy, et cetera, right? So, yes, absolutely to the texter's comment. That's absolutely correct. But again, that just points to we need to do something about
it. Yeah, thanks for the comment. Very good comment and text on that. And Jim, before the break, too, I asked the question a little bit about astrology as a time of year in which maybe as we're celebrating Advent, we do talk about the three wise men story and the fact that they followed a star to Bethlehem. And that's something that I've never really heard addressed in pulpits or in churches very often, a little bit here and there and as families. Jim, I understand I'm a Sagittarius given my birth date. And, you know, the horoscope thing cracks me up because it's sort of like you will breathe today. And I think how insightful and how prophetic, you know, this, these general horoscope ideas. What is it with astrology? What they're following the stars? Is this, can we follow the stars? What's happening here?
Yeah, so I'd like to draw a distinction between the astrology as currently practiced, which is basically just absurd, and the astrology that they thought that they did. They did see that they think that there were significant times that could be prophesied or it could be indicated in the stars, right? And so what should we as Christians think about this? This is a little uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
So as soon as you raise it, I'm like, oh, great. Thanks for that one, Peter. I think what's really important is to ask the question whether we believe that God can communicate through the stars.
Right.
Whether we believe that the Holy God that exists can communicate these events through the star that's, you know, standing over Bethlehem and all these sorts of things. And if God can communicate in Scripture through a donkey, I think he can figure out how to communicate through the stars. And so as Christians, I don't think we should have any problems with this idea, only because we're not going to be the one to tell God, no, God, you can't communicate this way or that way. But that's a big, big jump then to say, oh, since we have the Star of Bethlehem, that means I can look up in the stars and see whether I should, you know, do this or that because of, you know, this what the stars say. So just because God can communicate through the stars and has done so evidently, that doesn't sanction any and all future communications through the stars or learning from the stars or anything like that. If you want to learn from the stars, Peter, I think give it a shot, but I'm not convinced that there's going to be any great messages for you there.
Maybe I'll try it in the next week and we can reflect on that in next week's segment, see if it worked at all.
I think
you
should.
Have you seen any sort of theories that people have put out there suggesting maybe the star was a very slow moving version of Halley's Comet, or it was a convergence of Venus and Mars that lasted a really long time? I mean, is there people that have explored this kind of idea and say there is legitimate the things happening within sort of the stars and the heavens that would point to this?
There are two main theories that I've heard that seem plausible, and I honestly don't know enough about it to parse it out and decide, no, it's this one or that one. But the two that I've heard, one is a comet, the other is a supernova.
Hmm.
That there was literally a incredibly bright star that they would have seen as a star, but there was a supernova event that was seen in the sky. And there's various theories for and against that. I'm not sure we can nail it down with absolute certainty, but I think certainly something happened and it was significant and they took it as significant, and God used that event to be part of the revelation of the coming of his son.
Jim, we have just a couple minutes left here, and I know we've got some other questions and callers in at this time that we'll reference in just a minute. But I'm curious, too, when it comes to the birth of Christ, I've heard some things that our calendar that we have today, our Gregorian calendar, when we reference the fact that it's 2018 years A.D. or after Christ, that maybe he wasn't actually born on 0 A.D., that there is some different theories out there about being born 2 B.C., which I don't understand how this would work. Tell us about the calendar dating. What does A.D. even mean, and is there even debate about when Jesus was born, even in terms of December 25th?
Yeah, A.D. means Anno Domini, the year of our Lord, and so the idea is that it was dated from the birth of Christ. Now, we think that this was monks put this together in the early centuries of the Christian calendar, but we think they probably got it wrong. So the numbers that I've heard that the birth of Christ was actually about 4 to 6 BC, right? So now there's a whole bunch of reasons for dating it that way. And, you know, they get pretty deep into the weeds on this, but a lot of it has to do with when the Lucan prologue says this happened while Quirinius was governor of Syria.
Yeah.
And we're trying to pin that event down. And suffice it to say, we think that all those events were just a little earlier than what the monks that set the calendar thought it was.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. There's an endless array of topics we can get into this. I appreciate you coming in on Thursday mornings like this. I did see that there's one more listener text that we're not going to be able to get to, but maybe we can flip the chairs next week, because you know this is an area of studying research for me. And the question is, why did God use a rib to make Eve? Couldn't he have just created her from nothing? And so we'll talk about that in the upcoming week, you and I, Jim, and figure out how to address that one next week as part of the Ask Anything segment. But thanks, as you always do, coming in studio like this. It's always a fascinating conversation.
Thank you, Peter. Happy to do it.
We'll take a break here for Breakpoint and bottom of the hour news and come back for the last part of our show. And in the second half of this hour, I'll be joined by Hunter Baker. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the updates around the Robert Mueller investigation of our president and Russian collusion. I always love Breakpoint, and it's specifically insightful message given this morning about how we as churches can come around people with disabilities, as well as so many of the families that have children on the autistic spectrum. Rachel and I were talking during that segment. We have some guests that we can bring on that can talk specifically about helping churches be empowered to deal with so many of these situations. Also see that we have a listener comment who wrote in about Jim Bilby's segment just now, thinking that are we perhaps confusing astrology with astronomy when it came to the wise men and the interpretation of the stars. And so I asked Jim about that before he left, and he basically said it's a both and. They were astronomers in the sense that they understood the stars, but they were also astrologers in the sense that they tried to derive meaning from what they observed in the stars. So the answer to the question is yes, both astronomers and astrologers back in the day. Drew Griffin of Providence Magazine, he's the managing editor there, joined us yesterday talking about the greatest generation of which George H.W. Bush was a part, and a bit more about the former president.
George H.W. Bush really represents one of the last bastions of this greatest generation that led the United States through the latter half of the 20th century, and had this really uniquely Christian and at one time American ideal that to live is to serve others, right? That you're here and you're placed on this world not just to exist and not just to serve yourself, but to serve others. That we're blessed in order to bless others, whether you have ability or wealth or skill or privilege. And you really see that lived out in the life of George H.W. Bush. And so here's a man who was blessed with cultural privilege, blessed with wealth, and blessed with immense ability and courage. And he took all of those things and leveraged his entire life into public service.
Drew always does such a great job talking about some of the global headlines and some of the political realities of the day from a historically Christian perspective. If you want to catch all of what he had to say, you can go to myfaithradio.com and search for Drew Griffin and hear our entire segment in which we did a lot of reflection on the life of George H.W. Bush. We'll actually do a little bit more of that next with Hunter Baker, who is an associate professor of political science at Union University in Jackson, Tennessee, also serves as the Dean of College of Arts and Sciences there. We'll talk with Hunter a little bit about the life and legacy of President Bush, and we'll also touch a little bit on the Robert Mueller investigation. It seems to be coming to a close at this point in time and what we can anticipate in the next couple of weeks.
When a fight breaks out between you and your teenager at home, what's the focus of your anger? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. When tensions run high, you probably focused on a couple of things. The problem you're arguing about and the behaviors in your teen that need to change. Hey, these are important considerations, but I'd like to challenge you to add one more focus. Next time you're in a fight, think about your role in the conflict. Step away from the heat of the battle and reflect. Ask yourself, have I done anything to ignite this issue? Is there something I need to correct in my own behavior before correcting my teen? It's a convicting question. It takes two people to engage in battle. So make sure you've searched your contribution before you lash out at your kids.
Looking for more parenting wisdom? Go online to ParentingTodaysTeens.org or search for Parenting Today's Teens in your favorite app store.
Just about 18 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings for the 6th of December. We are 19 days before Christmas, and we're joined at the line this time by Hunter Baker, who is the Dean of College of Arts and Sciences at Union University, also an Associate Professor of Political Science there. Good morning, Hunter.
Hello, good morning.
So we've been asking all of our guests throughout this week, Hunter, if they have a favorite Christmas song during the season that really sort of dials them into the Christmas time.
Wow. Boy, that's tough. I'll tell you the one that comes to my mind the most. That's probably Mary, Did You Know? But I'm also a huge fan of Silent Night.
Oh, yeah. Silent Night, those, especially when you get through all the verses, not just the first verse, it really does kind of call us into that season.
Yes, that's right.
So I'd be curious if you watched any of the coverage of the funeral this past week of George H.W. Bush, obviously the entire memorial yesterday, but obviously, too, as he lay in state the past week. What was some of your take on this, and what are some of your observations about the life and legacy of the 41st president?
Yeah, I did pay attention to funeral proceedings and read all the transcripts of the eulogies, and I had also read the John Meacham book about the president. I'll tell you, the thing that I think about the most is really with regard to the end of the Cold War. when Bush ran for his second term, I remember that you know, he talked about kind of the accomplishment of finishing out the Cold War, and I don't think at the time that cut much ice with the American people. But in retrospect, I think that we should all be tremendously grateful to him, because you have to realize, you know, anybody under, I don't know, maybe 35, they don't appreciate this at all. But the Cold War was really one of the biggest crises that the human race has ever faced on planet Earth. I mean, we were very close on a number of occasions to an absolutely cataclysmic war with weapons on a scale that have really only been experienced by people in two cities in Japan that were both wiped out. When the Soviet Union was failing, anything could have happened. That could have ended very badly. You could have had some kind of nuclear strike. You could have had zealots or disappointed ideologues, or any number of things could have happened. And I would say that George H.W. Bush managed the decline of the Soviet Union very skillfully, and that we should all be grateful to him for that.
Well, there's a lot of talk about him being one of the most consequential one-term presidents because of the events that you just described. And, Hunter, when you take us back into that time, I remember growing up as a kid in school that we had underground bunkers in our school in the case there was some sort of nuclear attack. And I remember being afraid as a 6-, 7-, 8-year-old boy that suddenly some of these missiles would fall out of the sky. And obviously it wouldn't be suddenly. But I think we do underestimate the real threat that was happening during that time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, when I was in high school in the late 80s, you know, it was a common discussion for me and friends to kind of talk about nuclear war, to talk about how everything would change, to, you know, it may sound silly now, but we talk about if a nuclear missile was coming, would you drive toward it or drive away from it, right? You know,
yeah.
I mean, I still remember the incredible fear I had after I watched the television movie The Day After.
Oh, yes, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the worst night's sleep I ever had was after that film.
Well, and in light of that, and you discussed the way he managed the fall of the Soviet Union and, of course, all of the events of that, that so often when there's such a huge regime change like that, there is bloodshed, there is warfare,
yes.
There's a lot of people trying to fill the vacuum of power. And as this sort of understated gentleman, I think behind the scenes, we probably missed on how well he navigated that situation.
That's exactly right. He is one of these politicians who, you know, he was not very good as a public speaker or as a debater, but he was deeply knowledgeable. He really understood his craft. And, you know, one of the problems with politics is that we tend to undervalue some of those really important substantive parts of the job, and instead we tend to react to sort of the public presentation. You know, sometimes they call politics Hollywood for ugly people, which is a little unfair, but you get the idea, right? That's that same kind of image game. And he wasn't great at that, but he had the skills and the knowledge.
Well, and it's so interesting when we then think about the nuclear war scene today. It almost, and unfortunately so, it sort of comes off as blasé when you hear about maybe a summit that's going to happen in which maybe the president of our country, Trump, and perhaps Putin are going to be talking about where they stand on nuclear weapons. Do you follow this at all, Hunter, as part of your work, just the scene in terms of nuclear weaponry around the world still today?
I really haven't paid that much attention to that particular issue. But yeah, it's still tremendously important, and the reality is that it's not as though we decommissioned all the nuclear weapons. There are still more than enough nuclear weapons in existence to probably end life on planet Earth. So yes, it's critically important still.
Talking with Hunter Baker this morning of Union University about some of the life and the legacy of George H.W. Bush. Certainly I have the cold sweats and the shivers now thinking about the movie The Day After again, Hunter, so I appreciate that imagery. We'll take a short break and when we come back, I'd love to get your thoughts if you've been following the Robert Mueller investigation at all and maybe how these things tend to play themselves out as we anticipate perhaps a report coming out about Russian collusion here in the next few weeks. So more to come with Hunter Baker on Faith Radio Mornings. Of course, that song, Mary, Did You Know, is such a haunting, beautiful melody. It's one of the favorites of our current guest, Dr. Hunter Baker, who is Associate Professor of Political Science at Union University and the Dean of College of Arts and Sciences there. We're talking this morning a bit about some of the political scene. And, Hunter, before we talk a bit about the Robert Mueller investigation, you posited the question, and it sounds like you and I grew up at a similar time, high school in the 1980s, in which the question was, did you drive towards the nuclear holocaust or drive away from it? I was a drive away guy. How did you answer that question?
I would have driven away as well. I guess I have a bias toward surviving, right? A bias toward hope, I guess. yeah, but you know, I mean, and honestly, this is another thing. I really believe that that our coming safely through that crisis in the 20th century is a major sign of God's providence.
Absolutely.
It was so easily could have gone the other way.
Yeah, and when you see the horrors of what happened and you reference in Japan, you know, that would have been a global catastrophe pretty quickly.
Yes, that's right.
So a lot of the news headlines we sort of tabled for this past week, and even Washington, D.C. has tabled them in terms of things like the Robert Mueller investigation, which seems like it's been carrying on since the 1980s. Do we see any kind of conclusion to this? Where have you been following this at all, and what do you see in the investigation?
I follow it. I think that what's going to happen is he's going to issue a report. I think it's going to look bad because there's going to be a lot of people who are one way or the other connected to Donald Trump who have lied about things. But that having been said, Andrew McCarthy wrote about this, that what you really want is prosecutors investigating a crime rather than having an investigation that manufactures crimes. What I mean by that is that these people who, for the most part, who get in trouble are people who lie to investigators. And they don't even necessarily lie about a crime so much as they lie about something that is maybe ethically dodgy or that they're not proud of or something like that. But then they're on the hook for having lied to the investigator. And there's a ton of that here that, nobody should be happy about that. That's not a good thing. It doesn't say good things about people's character. But are we looking at some kind of crime committed by the president? I don't think so. I mean, I still don't see anything here really that indicates that Donald Trump committed a crime or was engaged in this massive collusion. So I think that there'll be a damaging report, but I don't think that it's going to end the Trump presidency or anything like that.
So even if there's not impeachment proceedings in play, it could be something that maybe hangs over, depending on the findings, hangs over the political cycle coming up for 2020. Would you say that this might be something that Democrats end up using against the president for the next 18 months or so?
Yeah, I think they will, although my guess is that it's gonna come out. He won't be in any serious trouble because of it, and he'll use that as a weapon himself, right? He'll continue to bang the drum that this was all a trumped up, no pun intended, political case against him. And honestly, I mean, I think about this and the investigation into Bill Clinton. Now we all remember that we ended with the Monica Lewinsky thing and sexual harassment, but you have to remember that actually began as an investigation into real estate dealings in Arkansas. So it ended pretty far afield. I'm concerned that this kind of process we've created in the wake of Watergate has turned into something pretty strange, pretty disruptive, and not necessarily all that helpful.
Well, and there is some of this sort of this broad discretionary leeway that it seems like Mueller has to investigate. And that has been part of the critique coming out of the White House, is that he should have had a much more limited scope relative to this investigation.
That's right. Yeah.
So in terms of some other headlines coming out of Washington before we run here, Hunter, I have to admit that I didn't understand some of the geopolitical implications of the death of the Saudi journalist Khashoggi in terms of what that might mean for the Saudi Arabian war in Yemen. Frankly, I didn't really know that there was much of a war happening in Yemen and that the United States was supporting Saudi Arabia. And coming out of this, there seems to be some mixed messages coming out of the Republican Senate as well as the White House. What do we see in this situation?
Well, it's really complex, right? I mean, I think obviously there's a pretty strong case that sort of the putative leader of Saudi Arabia maybe had something to do with ordering the death of this journalist, who is not a U.S. citizen, by the way. That should be clear. A U.S.-based journalist, they say. My understanding, not a U.S. citizen. But it's strange, right? I mean, so yes, they did this thing. You would typically think of that as maybe it's something for an international court, maybe. The way nations act in their sovereignty is an interesting thing. And so the question of – we talk a lot about whether the United States should punish Saudi Arabia. you know, would we ever think of other nations punishing the United States for things that we do? I mean, it's just an odd zone for us to be contemplating. And to the extent that Donald Trump has been cautious in all this, I have to say I kind of approve, because, you know, it's an odd thing to sort of be the judge of the nations as the United States. First, because our hands are not always clean, but second, because that's a tricky question. I mean, you know, how nations enforce things against each other. The other thing is that Saudi Arabia is just massively important internationally. And so when you get into these questions of punishing them or damaging that alliance, that is all very shaky stuff. I mean, you're handling nitroglycerin.
It is going to be really interesting to watch, because it is just a powder keg over there in the Middle East. Well, Hunter, thanks so much for joining us this morning, talking through both the life and the legacy of George H.W. Bush, as well as some of the headlines that are beneath the surface right now, but will certainly emerge next week in our country.
That's right. Thank you.
That's the end of our show here for Faith Radio Mornings on the 6th of December. A great guest again today in this first hour, having Professor Jim Bilby talk a little bit about astrology and astronomy and immigration in the first part of this hour, as well as Hunter Baker giving us a good take on some of the headlines coming out of Washington, D.C., some of what's happening with the life and the legacy of George H.W. Bush. And as always, we love that you listen. We love that you're part of the program here on Faith Radio Mornings. You allow us to do what we do in trying to bring hope and a sense of eternal perspective into the headlines of the day. And to that end, we've been celebrating Advent and the birth of our Savior all week, and we're going to go into break with Hunter Baker's favorite song, Silent Night. Well, great to be back with you this morning here on the 29th of November. It's funny, hopefully, we always hope for the show, and we pray every morning that this is going to bring some joy and some hope and encouragement in your life as you're following Jesus in this world. And it's funny, when you sit in the host chair, it probably does more for me than anybody else. I love talking with all the guests and their perspectives. It's a very rich time. So I encourage you to keep following Jesus and keep your eyes fixed on him, the author and perfecter of our faith.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.